Hello, and welcome to Southern Living Magazine, brought to you by OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Angela Odie, and during the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the September 2019 issue of Southern Living. I hope you enjoy it. From Life at Southern Living, here is the letter from Sid Evans, the editor-in-chief. Style and Substance, Tastemakers and Entrepreneurs Who Are Changing the South. Earlier this year, we decided to host a gathering of some of the most remarkable women you'll read about in this issue, The New Southern Tastemakers, page 45. They came from all over the South, New Orleans, Houston, Atlanta, and even Taylor, Mississippi, and they shared an entrepreneurial spirit as well as a knack for Instagram and a taste for fashion. The idea was to hear their stories, their challenges, and their efforts to make our region a better, prettier place. As the only guy in the room, I did my best to shut up and listen. We sat around a conference table, and one by one, they talked about what it's like to start a new business in the modern South, even as many of them were juggling the responsibilities of motherhood. Ann Mashburn told how she and her husband, Sid, moved to Atlanta and opened a men's clothing store in an emerging neighborhood in 2007, all while raising five daughters. Now they also have four women's stores, AnnMashburn.com, more than 100 employees, including three of their daughters, and a brand that has redefined classic Southern style. Brandy Gary talked about how she manages to be a math teacher, model, and blogger, who dishes out fashion tips every day, even as she renovates a 1920s cottage in Houston. And Susan Hull Walker discussed her journey from being a minister to the founder of Ibu Movement, a Charleston, South Carolina company that sells textiles and other items produced by women all over the world and help lift them out of poverty. It's so inspiring to work with them, she said to the group, and also to have a chance to come meet women like you. By the end of our day together, they were finishing each other's sentences, trading emails, and making plans to reconnect. Their creative journeys hadn't been easy, and they seemed to be inspired by the fact that so many Southern women were doing something they loved, making a living, and having positive impacts on their communities. They credited their mothers, sisters, and friends with helping them pursue their passions, and you could hear the excitement in their voices as they talked about the future. There are more Southern women like that in this issue, from Oscar-winning actress and Auburn University alumna Octavia Spencer, to James Beard Award semifinalist chef Chidi Kumar, who plays guitar in a rock band when she's not overseeing her restaurant Garland in Raleigh, North Carolina. Every one of them has a compelling story, and I can't wait to see what they do next. The Grumpy Gardener, Our Garden Expert Alleviates Your Growing Pains, by Steve Bender. Unwanted Advances. I have a male holly bush that is sending shoots towards a female holly bush more than 20 feet away. I don't want those shoots in the flower bed with the female. How can I discourage it or stop it? Jeannie. Even though female hollies often need a male somewhere in the yard to produce berries, this aggressive behavior sounds like a classic case of a hostile garden situation, Jeannie. The most drastic answers are to either reassign the male holly to a different department of your garden or cut off the offending branches. However, if this is the male's first transgression, you might have a long talk with him about respecting fellow hollies. Boxwood Trouble. Several boxwoods in my Baton Rouge front yard have started dying. Half of the shrubs turned brown and brittle. I cut off these parts, but nothing is coming back. They always get good watering, and I don't see any bugs on them. What's a girl to do? Jennifer. This issue is probably due to a soil-borne disease called boxwood dieback. It attacks plants growing in wet conditions. Improving the drainage is the only answer. You should try mulching around the base of each shrub to get excess water to drain away more easily. Also, redirect the flow coming from any nearby downspouts. Cutting off the dead parts was correct, but don't expect any new growth until next spring. Gross green things. I just found a couple of huge green worms eating all the leaves on my tomato plant. What are they, and what should I do? Wendy. They are either tomato or tobacco hornworms, two very similar-looking caterpillars that hatch from eggs laid by a large moth. They usually hang on the undersides of leaves, so you and hungry birds won't see them. They have big appetites and can quickly strip a tomato plant of leaves. Insecticides don't work that well on fully grown caterpillars, so the best control at this point is to pick them off and squish them. Have fun. Crying shame. We've been told by a tree service that our 10-year-old weeping willow is diseased and has insects. They're asking an arm and a leg just to prune the dead limbs. What do you recommend? Anne. A weeping willow is naturally a short-lived plant, beset by numerous insect and disease pests. Paying to prune dead branches from a dying tree doesn't make much sense. You're better off removing it and planting an oak, maple, or weeping cherry in its place. Cutting disaster. Trimming weeds around my new female winterberry bush, I accidentally cut it down to 4 inches. Will it come back? Kathy. Yes, it will grow back, but because it produces flowers and berries on the previous year's growth, you won't get berries next year. Mulch around the plant to keep the weeds from returning. Grumpy's Gripe of the Month. I have a bone to pick with a few of my faithful readers. In addition to articles in Southern Living, I also write brilliant pieces for southernliving.com, and I post them on my Grumpy Gardener Facebook page. Say I post a link to a story titled How to Turn Your Hydrangea Blue and give people a chance to comment. Invariably, someone will write, "Can you tell me how to turn my hydrangea blue?" Come on, just click the link. Around the Garden, a seasonal guide for green thumbs. Plant of the Month, honoring Joubert, Japanese anemone. Your September garden won't be starved for a show with these striking blooms, by Steve Bender. Here's a perennial that's used much less than it should be, perhaps because of its name. People aren't sure if they should ask for an anemone or an anemone. It's the latter. No matter. This is an excellent performer for early fall when other flowers are scarce. Japanese anemone forms clumps of handsome, deep green leaves. They slowly spread but are not invasive. Divide clumps in spring to get more blooms. In late summer, graceful wands rising 3 feet tall carry showy white blossoms. Each distinctive 2 to 3 inch flower features a green eye in the center, ringed by bright yellow stamens. Blooms are great for cutting. In the south, this plant prefers moist, well-drained, fertile soil and light shade. Grow it in USDA zones 4 to 8. You can order it from bluestoneperennials.com. Your September checklist. Feed birds naturally. Nourish your feathered friends. Bird feeders aren't the only way. Flowers can do this too. Don't cut the old end of summer stems. Let them go to seed instead. The birds will quickly find them. Among the better seed producers are sunflower, number one, zinnia, salvia, purple coneflower, cosmos, black-eyed Susan, bachelor's button, and hollyhock. Fix your soil. Did hard red clay hurt your vegetable harvest this year? Then clear off the old veggies now and plant a cover crop, which will spend fall through spring loosening up your soil with its extensive root system. In spring, till it into the soil before planting. Its stems and leaves will add organic matter as well as nutrients. Good cover crops include winter annual rye, buckwheat, mustard greens, crimson clover, red clover, and white clover. Back to black. It happens every fall. Upset gardeners email me with a desperate question. Why did my crepe myrtle, gardenia, azalea, camellia turn black? The culprit is a fungus called sooty mold. It grows on sticky, clear honeydew secreted by bugs that suck sap from the plant. Sooty mold then grows on the honeydew. Solution. Next summer, as soon as you spot a drip of honeydew on a leaf or branch, spray your plant with horticultural oil according to the label directions to kill the insects. Becoming Octavia. Born and raised in Alabama, Octavia Spencer credits her devout faith, supportive family, and deep southern roots for keeping her grounded as she breaks barriers and accepts daring new roles. Interview by Allison Glock. Oscar winner and author Octavia Spencer, 47, can't wait to return home to her garden. She misses the roses and the daisies, the finches that alight on the trees. Most of all, she misses the stillness. Born in Alabama, sixth in a family of 7 children, Spencer has known what it means to have to hustle from the jump, so she keeps busier than a hive of bees. Currently filming The Witches in London with Anne Hathaway, Spencer will dive immediately into her high-profile Netflix series about Madam C.J. Walker, the first African-American female self-made millionaire, followed by a comedy called Thunder Force with her friend Melissa McCarthy. Also, be on the lookout for Truth Be Told, a thriller for Apple TV that examines the American obsession with true crime. In her spare time, Spencer writes her children's book series, Randy Jones, Ninja Detective. All the while, she admits, leaves little opportunity for smelling the roses or watching birds. My mom taught me that idle hands are the devil's workshop, she explains. I've definitely taken that to heart. Spencer laughs and then adds, as an actor, I'm always like, I've got to get to the next gig and the next. But you do need to unplug, and there's no better place to do it than at home in the South. S.L., tell us about your childhood. You lost your father when you were young, and your mother worked multiple jobs to keep your family afloat. O.S., we had nothing, but we had a very strong mother who had a strong work ethic. She always dreamed for us and taught us to do the same for ourselves, beyond the boundaries the world placed on us. If I had listened to society, I never would have progressed to where I am. We had very little, but because of my mother, I knew my station in life did not dictate my path. S.L., how did your mother set that example for you and your siblings? O.S., she had mouths to feed, so she took on jobs to make sure we had everything that we needed. We seldom got what we wanted, but we had what was necessary. To me, being Southern means working hard and believing in yourself and God. It's having that strong sense of community, faith first and then family. It's funny, the majority of my friends in L.A. are from the South. S.L., do you enjoy cooking and entertaining? O.S., no, I am the entertained. I go over to people's houses. Nobody who knows me wants me to throw a party for them, trust me. They'd rather I come over and bring a covered dish or a bagged salad. S.L., what would you say is the most Southern thing about you? O.S., my faith. It's the guiding force in my life. It keeps me grounded, aids in every decision that I make. The golden rule, it's the foundation. With a rocky foundation, you will stumble, but with a solid one, you will flourish. S.L., how much was church a part of your upbringing? O.S., we didn't have a car, so we only went to church on Sundays. We would carpool with other people. The services were long, very, very long, but there was always some sort of snack afterward. You'd better feed people if you want to keep them there all day. S.L., so you headed to the church basement to dig into those casseroles? O.S., exactly. But you know what I've realized now that I'm older? Our strongest bonds are made over meals. So that type of fellowship, building a sense of community, one of the best places to do that is definitely your church home. S.L., do you ever find yourself defending the South? O.S., I've learned to let people draw their own conclusions. It's hard to defend some of the stuff happening right now, but I hate it when people attribute all of those things only to the South. It's going on all over the country. S.L., it can be a very difficult and polarizing time. O.S., yes, gone are the days when you could have different views and still have meaningful conversation. I'm from the birthplace of the civil rights movement. It's history. Some of it is good and some of it is bad, but that place is also filled with beautiful people. You know, if your car breaks down in Alabama, it doesn't matter what you look like or who you are, somebody will always want to help without question. I remember moving to Los Angeles and my car broke down. I stood there for hours and nobody stopped. So that tells you who we are as Southern people. We help our neighbors. S.L., is there a film or TV show that gets the South right? O.S., I can't say really, but I can tell you when the accents are wrong because I cringe at terrible Southern accents. S.L., what do you watch in your non-existent free time? O.S., Game of Thrones, and police procedurals such as CSI, Criminal Minds, Law and Order, that type of stuff. I like figuring out the crime. I love horror and mystery. S.L., and you also write mystery books for kids? O.S., I grew up dyslexic, so I would read mysteries constantly to keep from falling behind, and I fell in love with them. I want to give children some of what I enjoyed growing up. I think, in time, I will be a fantastic writer, but it's hard. S.L., when did you realize that you had dyslexia? O.S., very early on, and I had really supportive teachers. My homeroom teacher in 8th grade, Miss Holly, was a favorite. Miss Broadford in first grade, Mr. White, my biology teacher, Miss Williamson, my English teacher, and Miss Moore, my guidance counselor. SL, it's impressive that you can still remember all of their names. OS, my interactions with them made it difficult for me to ever forget them. They really uplifted everybody, not just me. Even the problem kids had their moments in the sun. SL, in your latest movie, Loose, out now, you play a teacher, Harriet Wilson, who is not exactly what you'd call uplifting. OS, that was a really challenging part. I had issues with her. I'm from a family who had no money, but education was stressed in our lives. Had there been a Harriet in my childhood, I would have languished rather than flourished. SL, Harriet seemed to relish deciding who was a good kid and who was a bad kid. OS, when you look at it on paper, her intentions were great. She wanted to upend stereotypes for black people. I just think she was misguided. I chose that part to illuminate the fact that there are gatekeepers, when in fact every child's potential should be recognized and nurtured. All kids need a little bit of encouragement. You would not believe the number of people who were disregarded just because their potential on paper doesn't seem so great. SL, speaking of gatekeepers, you've actually optioned books and scripts that reflect diversity and voices that aren't heard enough in Hollywood. The same goes for the collaborators you hire. Why is doing that so important to you? OS, one thing that I always knew I wanted to do was to create more opportunities for other people with my production company. I've been collecting and optioning books for the past 10 years. SL, you don't seem to ever slow down. How do you keep from getting depleted? OS, I'm in that battle right now. Once I'm done filming the movie with Melissa McCarthy and the next season of my series, I'm taking 3 months off. SL, when you reflect on your life, what makes you the proudest? OS, I'm proud of the fact that I'm surrounded by the loveliest people in my family and friends. We don't take our relationships for granted. My network of people helps keep me sustained, and I'm grateful for that. SL, do you ever find it hard to feel connected because you are on the road so much? OS, no, I have a strong family base, and my friends understand what I do. When I'm back in town, we just pick up right where we left off with no hard feelings, no nothing. SL, are you optimistic about what the future holds? OS, you know, I'm not an optimist. I basically consider myself to be a realist. I see things exactly as they are. It's not all terrible, but we still have a long way to go. The youth are always doing things that make me smile and give me hope, but I don't want people to get complacent. I always ask, what are you doing to keep that ball rolling? SL, seems like you're trying to do quite a bit to make things better. OS, doing something that you hate makes for a very miserable existence. I just want to be happy, to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm living out my dreams every day, and the minute I stop loving it, I'm leaving the party. SL, and then you'll be heading back to your private garden sanctuary. OS, exactly that. From the Travel and Culture section, your guide to the South now. City Guide, New Orleans, new style. The South's most expressive city just turned the big 300, but she has never looked better, by Hannah Hayes. In New Orleans, the notion of local color has always been applied literally. Neighborhoods lined with houses in every hue mimic the countertop crowded with glass bottles of flavored syrups at Hanson's Snow Blizz or the Rainbow of Gelati in the Angelo Brocato Parlor. On Sundays, a flood of feathers in vivid violet, fruit punch pink, and electric teal pours into the streets for second-line parades. The trees, still wearing last year's Mardi Gras beads, and some from the decade before, seem bioluminescent in the streetlights. New Orleans is the most placey place in America, says Natalie Jordy, co-owner of the much-anticipated Hotel Peter and Paul, a long-vacant Catholic church, convent, school, rectory that was turned into a resplendent 71-room retreat in the Maronite neighborhood. The project was completed in partnership with the design firm Ash NYC. Jordy's ambitious intention for the property, to rekindle the past and recompose it for the present, is what New Orleanians have done better than anyone else for centuries. But take one look around these days, and it's clear that the famously patinaed city, now more than a decade past Hurricane Katrina, has a notably new look remixed with its history. At Geordie's Hotel, the schoolhouse stairs, dating back to the late 1800s, still bear the embossed steps of students. The frescoed church dome remains. However, the renovation of this 50,000-square-foot compound has set a new standard for future projects. Wrought iron canopy beds dressed in gingham linens with drapes to match, armoires made by local craftspeople, and apothecary items perfumed with bergamot and rosemary appear in every room, some featuring clawfoot bathtubs for a true sanctuary. In the church's former rectory, beloved Bacchanal Wine operates the hotel's restaurant, the Elysian Bar, with chef Alex Harrell at the helm. Here, locals and visitors congregate in the layered, lounge-like dining rooms, chromatically inspired by 14th through 18th century religious paintings, and the coffee shop with a trompe-l'oeil tent in blue and white. Outside, the original bell tower shades a lush courtyard. "We don't have to invent a backstory for this place," says Geordie, who lives four blocks away. "Not a day goes by that I don't run into a former student or a nun or someone who got married in the church. Seeing our neighbors embrace this place means so much to me." At French Quarter Bistro Justine, local husband and wife design team Sabri and Caroline Farouki of the firm Farouki Farouki used a fittingly French influence for a sizable shotgun space. Flea market finds from Paris are paired with a blush-colored backdrop of vertical subway tile and artist Ellen McComber's sprawling sequin and fabric maps of the city. Although there are other build-outs, like Southeast Asian spot Maypop and Indian eatery Saffron Nola, lean more modern, Caroline and Sabri say they still feel very grounded in the city. "I grew up in a Cajun family with a high level of hospitality, and we try to infuse that welcoming spirit into all our projects," says Caroline. "Tradition is not so much an aesthetic for us as it is how New Orleans comes together over food," Sabri adds. More recent restaurants that are remixing tradition with a global perspective dot the city from the Bywater to Uptown. Among them are Chef Rebecca Wilkham's newly opened Italian beauty, Gianna Restaurant, Chef Zhu Zeminik's turquoise gem Zazu, Wine Bar Saint-Germain, which features a casual courtyard, award-winning bartender Chris Hanna's cocktail atelier Jewel of the South, and Manolito, his other shoebox-sized bar with daiquiris and Cuban snacks, and Couvent, inside the Eliza Jane Hotel, where French classics feel fresh. "New Orleans style is more recycled than developed from scratch," says Wayne Clark, the fulfillment manager for Optical Upstart Crew. Clark was raised in Uptown and saw a priority shift toward preservation after Katrina. "The culture only gets better as we redesign what we already have," he explains. "And what we already have is so beautiful." Since its launch, Crew has released architectural sunglasses with frames named for the streets that inspired their color palettes. A cadre of other style-minded businesses includes West London Boutique, Sunday Shop, Pilot and Powell, NDNO, Defend New Orleans, and Blue Dream Vintage Boutique. Trishala Bansali, who also grew up in the city, was one of those inspired by Crew's success. She moved back here from New York to start her own clothing line, Lika. Connecting her Indian heritage to her hometown, the collection includes sultry weather staples that are made with fabrics like khadi, sourced from India. "There is just something about the sense of community here," says Bansali. "Maybe that comes with this feeling of New Orleans being a very vulnerable city, but these strong ties are essential to my brand." When Margaret Shea and Charlotte Killen opened their shop, St. Claude Social Club, they modeled it after a parlor to foster a community of female entrepreneurs in the city who now gather for monthly events while perusing their vibrant collection of vintage and indie brands, along with Killen's jewelry line. After spending decades as a fashion trend forecaster in California, Shea, a Louisiana native, found it liberating to return to New Orleans' lawless style. "It's fun, free, and funky, and there's a sense of ease to it," she says. "Bordering on costume is a huge part of the look here." Desiree Otiveros thinks that look goes for buildings, too. The owner of Badass Balloon Company, the El Paso, Texas transplant, is known for levitating latex installations made out of Technicolor balloons, some so big she has to use a hydraulic crane, which have become must-haves for restaurant awnings, parties, and festivals. The artists and makers in this town, we're the masters of elegant excess, she says. Another artist making his mark is social activist Brandon B. Mike Odoms. His recent mural depicting jazz forefather Buddy Bolden and his band, in shades of deep purple with a pop of marigold, puts the city's most historic innovation front and center in the rapidly changing Central Business District. Down the river in the lower Ninth Ward, Ronald W. Lewis keeps his part of the city's colorful past alive with by-appointment tours of his backyard museum, House of Dance and Feathers, filled with Mardi Gras Indian memorabilia and costume pieces. Hanson's Snowbliz owner, Ashley Hanson, feels the push and pull of tradition and sees the ebb and flow of both old-timers and newcomers standing at the ice-shaving machine her grandfather invented when he and his wife opened the landmark snowball stand, which turned 80 this year. Instead of removing the past from its walls, covered with handwritten signs, framed photos, and newspaper clippings, she layers the present over them. A new stratum of poster paper cutouts advertises her own marks, like a zest-flecked satsuma and rose-toned fresh watermelon. It's a reflection of the city in a cup, the different tastes and personalities, she says. All the flavors of New Orleans. We want to share them with everyone. Passionately share them. From the Southern Tales section, Petiquette, Call the Sitter. Just because you're traveling doesn't mean your dog must leave home, by Grace Haynes. Keep them comfortable. Going out of town can be stressful for you and your pet. Rather than boarding, consider hiring a sitter to stay overnight. This allows you to be more flexible with your coming and going times and can sometimes be more cost-effective. Best of all, your dog's schedule goes uninterrupted. Ask your vet or friends for referrals, or browse reputable sites such as WAG, wagwalking.com, and Rover, rover.com, for someone in your area. Prep for their needs. Leave food, leashes, bowls, and waste bags in a spot that the sitter can easily find with a detailed schedule of your dog's routine. Include instructions for medications, meals, and walks. The American Kennel Club recommends listing the phone number, address, and directions to your vet, and also suggests leaving a credit card and an authorization letter so it can be used by the sitter for any possible pet emergency. Pet of the Month, Mr. Congeniality. Say hello to Hondo, a handsome Bernese Mountain Dog with a lovable personality. 2-year-old Hondo weighs over 100 pounds, but still climbs into his owner's lap like he did when he was a puppy. He's affectionate almost to a fault and is always begging for attention. The big guy has no sense of personal space, says owner Joy Johnson. He got his name from the quirky sci-fi film The History of the Future Folk, in which aliens come to Earth and fall in love with bluegrass music. It's hard to say whether Hondo is a music fan, but he sure loves his new human brother. Hondo likes to lick the baby, but isn't sure what to think about his climbing and toy throwing, says Johnson. Instagram, Hondo the Burner. Hometown, Nashville. Favorite season, winter. Hondo loves cold weather, especially snow days. Top toy, a stuffed cow. Local hangouts, Two Rivers Dog Park, Hill Center, an outdoor mall in Nashville's Green Hills area, and nearby breweries. Not a fan of baths and oranges. Snack time craving, cheese. Thank you for listening to today's Southern Living Magazine. If you have questions or comments about the program, please call us at 210-829-4223. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Angela Odie saying goodbye from L Radio. Have a great weekend.